And now the moment of truth, your phone calls with our guest Peter Lance, and we'll do all that when we come back on Coast to Coast AM. I guess what concerns me, Peter, about all this is what's on the horizon. What's out there that we may know about and we haven't reacted yet? What are the motives? Why are we permitting these things to happen? Or maybe there's just nothing out there at all. But I tend not to believe that.
No, you raised the specter of the nuclear event. And, you know, when I was on this panel in July with Mike Scheuer, I said naively, well, you know, my sense is that bin Laden wouldn't do that because there's such a sizable Arab American population in virtually every major American city. So if he takes out Detroit or, you know, New York City or Los Angeles, he's going to have a lot of Islamic blood in his hands. And Mike said, no, you don't get it, man. He said, the mullahs have already given him the approval. It's called the human tax. In other words, whatever it takes to wage the jihad against the Satan, the crusaders, as they call us, is whatever the loss of Islamic life, that's the human tax that we pay. So when I heard that, my blood ran cold because, frankly, there's nothing that prevents them. We know about how many, nuclear weapons from the old former Soviet republics are missing. So what has prevented that? What has prevented, God forbid, another Bojinka-like device? They know how to build it. You know, what's prevented something like that from getting on a plane? You know, with all the best efforts of the TSA, we see every day how easy it is for people to smuggle things on board aircraft. So it just, you know, it almost makes you, turn to religion and say, maybe with the will of God, we've been protected, but we can't count on that.
They want something bigger, Peter. Maybe they don't want just another plane crash. Maybe they want the whole finale.
Well, I'll tell you one thing that they have already achieved is they've engaged us and they're sapping our resources. You know, I was just looking through Amazon.com nonfiction bestsellers list, and in the top 50, Sun Tzu, The Art of War, there are two separate translations that are on Amazon. He wrote this book, I think, in the 6th century or something. And this brilliant Chinese strategist talked about winning without fighting, the art of war, sucking your enemy's strength. And bin Laden has just brilliantly done that. And somebody sent me an email saying I'm supporting bin Laden when I call him brilliant. No, it's just every word in every book I've written has described these people as despicable, yet they're also capable. And if we don't understand that, then we'll never defeat them.
All right, let's go to the phones. East of the Rockies, you're on the air, and where are you calling from? Hi there.
Hello, is that me?
Yeah, it is you.
Hi, hello.
Where are you?
I'm calling from Lower Manhattan. My office was across the street from the World Trade Center.
Ah, okay.
Yeah. This is a really good show. Peter is a voice of reason. Some of the shows are a little over the edge, and but Peter, this show is very well balanced, so I appreciate Peter's words. But I want to ask him about a very important missing piece of the puzzle. Before I do that, my heart goes out to all the Katrina victims, and I believe that some of them are just as deserving of a settlement as the 9/11 families. The sick, the ones who couldn't evacuate, it was just the greatest act of negligence and indifference I've ever seen. It was disgusting. But getting back to my question for Peter, okay? Now, you mentioned Snell worked in the Southern District around 1995.
Right.
Well, Giuliani also worked in the Southern District a little before that, right before he became mayor.
Right.
Around 91, 92, I believe.
That's why he became famous. Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. It's a very closed society. So I'll just leave you with this one question. What do you suppose Giuliani knew or didn't know, given that it's such a buddy-buddy, small-town world down there in the Southern District? And I'll get off now. So thank you.
Okay. Thank you.
It's a great question. I think when Rudy Giuliani testified before the 9/11 Commission last year it was at the university, the New School in New York is where they had the hearing. I was shocked when he actually uttered this phrase, and the press barely picked up on it. He said, "Knowing what I know now, I would have done nothing to change what I did to prepare New York City prior to 9/11. That goes down to me as one of the most arrogant.
You're losing your voice, Peter. You're losing your voice.
I'm sorry, George. That statement, wait, Giuliani says, I mean, we all can benefit from hindsight in history, right? Well, that's how we learn. That's how we get better. And for Rudy Giuliani to circle the wagons and defend his position by saying, I would have done nothing different, even if I had known the intelligence, that was the question. I think Commissioner Lehman posed to him. They said, well, what would you have done if you had known, as mayor of New York City, that there were these 33 terror warnings, 52 warnings that summer from the FAA saying that there were 5 potential hijack warnings, 2 of them were suicide hijack warnings, you know, would you have done anything different? He said, no. Now, whether or not Rudy Giuliani is just a crony of the Southern District feds, and whether or not Rudy Giuliani had some kind of prior knowledge, I don't know. But the idea that Rudy Giuliani made his bones on 9/11, became famous after 9/11 for doing nothing more than walking through the rubble and doing it any mayor of any city would have done, and that he was called heroic for it, is outrageous to me. The fact that Bernie Kerik, who was the police commissioner at the time, we now know had multiple skeletons in his closet, including associations with organized crime. The fact that George Bush nominated him, imagine if Bernie Kerik was the director of Homeland Security today, post-Katrina, okay? So you have to ask yourself, if you go to Rudy Giuliani, he's become a multi-millionaire, and what is his specialty? Threat prevention and crisis management, and yet he had Bernie Kerik at his side as his trusted crony for years. What does that say about his ability to manage a crisis or prevent threat? That's my sense of Rudy Giuliani. I think he was a great mayor for New York City in those years. I lived there prior to him and after him, and he turned the city around. He did a remarkable job
on crime.
No doubt about that. Give him credit where credit is due. But is he a hero of 9/11? Absolutely not.
Want to hear something weird?
Yep.
You know, he was in London on July 7th at the time of the bombings.
No kidding. Yeah. I didn't know that.
Isn't that weird?
That's weird.
So many coincidences.
But I doubt if he was taking the tubes or a bus.
He was not. Wild Card Line, you're on the air with us. Hi there.
Hello.
Hi, go ahead.
Hi. I'm calling from Northern California. My name is Melissa. Uh-huh. I wanted to ask the guest if, during his searches, he had come across a weekly publication that was like a combination word search, crossword, weekly publication. My mom had one of her employees bring it to her after September 11th. So the publication came out the Sunday before September 11th. And in one of the puzzles, there was words like airplane, towers, Muhammad, September, Allah, twin, New York. I mean, and I can't even remember the rest of them, but it was like, you know, there are no coincidences. My dad handed it over to the FBI. My mother tracked down the publication and spoke to the guy that ran that, and he said that he kind of contracted out and bought puzzles from various different people, and that he would track down and find out who he bought that puzzle from. And she didn't hear from him again until after the anthrax situation down in Florida. And he called her and said that somehow he had an association. I don't know if he was a subsidiary of that publication or what it was, but he was down there, and one of the employees in that building that had that anthrax thing had told him that, by the way, a piece of mail came for you, and it was either a returned check that he had written to the guy that wrote the puzzle, that had sold the puzzle to him, or it was a check coming back to him as a refund.
I'm losing you, dear, so you better hurry up. Your phone's very bad.
Oh, I'm sorry. Anyway, they had handed it over to the FBI. The FBI interviewed the owner of the publication, and he never heard anything else about it. I never heard anything on the news. I mean, the publication, the check and the letter that had come to him to the building that the anthrax, the first one, that whatever, the Sun Globe or something down there, the check that came to him was...
I'm going to have to let you go. You're phone quality was too bad. Do you know what direction she was going in, Peter?
I never heard about that. And if she wants to write me at peterlance.com and just, you know, give me the specifics, I'd like to get that information. But I'll tell you one thing. This was in the 9/11 documentary that the National Geographic recently aired that I was a part of. And they have documented, George, and you know this story, I think, that there was a young student in Brooklyn a week before 9/11. He was kind of drifting off one day, and he was looking out the window toward the Trade Center, and the teacher said, "What are you doing?" And he said, "Those towers are not going to be standing next week." He was an Arab-American student. So if kids on the street in Brooklyn, New York knew about it, why didn't we know about it, or did we?
Good point. Let's go west of the Rockies. You're on the air. Hi.
Yeah, Bob and Williams Lake. Great show, Peter and George. Couple of quick questions, Peter. Do you think Al-Qaeda wired Building 7 and put a 737 through a 16-foot hole in the Pentagon and six reinforced concrete walls? And last but not least, I think Cheney put stop on the investigation for the put options. And just like Spectre and James Bond, the New World Order is everywhere. And I think they own this administration. Rumsfeld put aspartame in your food. I mean, it's nonstop. I mean, these guys are out for blood, and they're out to depopulate this planet.
Well, those are pretty strong words. I don't know if you could say that, Peter.
Well, no. I mean, we talked about when we were in the heated debate with Alex, I talked about my sense of Seven World Trade. I think it's pretty clear that the evidence is that that building was intentionally brought down in the afternoon. But I also have evidence of an Arab fellow that was found and arrested by the New York City Police Department coming out of the building after both towers had collapsed right across the street, and that he was talking on a cell phone in Arabic, that he had stolen a probationary firefighter's turnout coat from 10 engine 10 truck on the other side of the center that morning. So he knew to be down there. He worked for a messenger service in Midtown. He was not supposed to be there. I think he was a spotter, and he may have planted an incendiary device in Seven World Trade. That was also, remember, Giuliani's command center, and it was also where the office of the CIA and the Secret Service were in New York City. So there may have been other reasons for that building being, quote, pulled, but there clearly are unanswered questions. I think the put option thing is unbelievable that no one has really ever followed that down, and the 9/11 Commission didn't even mention it effectively. So, you know, I haven't gotten to the Illuminati stage yet, but these are disturbing questions. And the point is, the debate needs to continue. People should be angry and should be asking these questions and firing off memos to every single chairman of every intelligence oversight committee on the Hill and saying, what's the story? Why can't we convene a 9/11 investigative committee that is composed of American citizens? You know, Bill Buckley once said, how bad would it be if the U.S. Senate was composed of the first 100 names in the Brooklyn phone directory? Would it really be that much different, you know? Why can't we have an American citizens panel with subpoena power, with teeth, composed of journalists, academics, and people outside of the government with no relation? 32 of the 75 staff members of the 9/11 Commission were former members of the FBI, CIA, NSA, White House, or the oversight committees that failed. I mean, the foxes guarded the chicken coop. Why can't we have in this country an independent panel? I know within the sound of your voice, George, you could put together an extraordinary group of educated people and just people from the streets who have good old American common sense that would not let a stone be unturned until the truth came out. Why can't we do that?
Let's pick it up by going to our first-time caller line. Welcome to the program. Hi there.
Hey, George. It's David calling from Edmonton.
Hi, David. Go ahead.
Well, I just wanted to mention to you very quickly that over at the Nighthawk Zone, it's our one-month anniversary, and I just wanted to...
Well, happy anniversary, but let's move on with our friend Peter Lance.
Okay. Hey, Peter. I just wanted to ask you, why did the Justice Department ignore evidence from the Philippines National Police in 95 that Ramzi Youssef had conspired with his uncle to, as early as 94, to set in the motion that
That's the essential, you nailed, that's what I, the essential question I raise in my first book, A Thousand Years for Revenge. And Dietrich Snell, I hate to keep pounding on that poor fellow, but Dietrich Snell is one of the guys. You know, I wish somebody would call him, wake him up wherever he is, and say, Dietrich, why don't you call in and answer that question? You're the U.S. attorney on the Bojinka case. Why did you ignore the evidence of the planes as missiles plot in 1995?
Yep. I also wanted to ask you very quickly, what's your opinion on document number W199I and like the Northwoods document? How do you feel about that?
You know, I think there's so much distance between Northwoods and 9/11. I mean, it suggests that members of our government are capable of starting wars for the sake of profiteering and for the sake of foreign policy. But I don't know if you can draw a direct line between Northwoods and 9/11 as the same people involved. I mean, that's again, Alex Jones' thesis. But, you know, I really focus specifically, that's why I keep naming names, on specific people who might be able to get called in front of a grand jury and that could get indicted, and maybe that will pop open the truth to this scandal. And that's where I am. I don't fault others for asking those questions. I encourage them, but it's just not my area of expertise.
Okay. Thank you very much,
George. All right. Thanks, David. Appreciate you being part of the program. Let's go west of the Rockies. You're on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hi. Hello.
Yes. Yeah. We can hear you.
Barely.
Sorry, I'm calling from my cell phone. I'm calling from San Diego. Hello.
Yeah, we can hear
go
you.
Go ahead. Go ahead.
My name is George, and I'm calling from San Diego. And I'd like to address a question that Peter, and I would like also to write to him later on. I would like to address the question of Arabic translators for the U.S. government. This issue has been going on for many, many years. I'm one of those people who have applied prior to 9/11 for a government job as an Arabic translator, and I have a degree, a Bachelor of Arts in Speech Communication, and I believe after 5 years and five interviews, including an interview with the CIA, the FBI, and the U.S. Army, that I believe that the government does not want good people. They do not want good translators so that problems would not be solved. And I have evidence to provide to you about my situation, and I've been for 5 years. Called up five times and nothing has happened yet. And instead, they have taken people who have no English proficiency that just came out of Iraq from ex-Saddam Army people. They have taken them as translators with the Army and are going to give them top security clearances. And I just want to add credence and credibility to you about the government incompetence and actually the cover-up and wanting to have hotspots and problems instead of solutions.
Please write to me at peterlance.com, and I want to put you together with Sibel Edmonds. You may know, George knows, Sibel Edmonds is this courageous Turkish-American immigrant who volunteered after 9/11 to work for the FBI, went into their translation unit, and was shocked to find not only were key documents not being translated intentionally, but she found that there were people linked to Turkish-American interest that may have been actually linked to Al-Qaeda. So she tried to blow the whistle on these people, and she got fired. She then tried to sue to get her job back, and the U.S. government invoked the Justice Department, almost rarely used national secrecy, to prevent any information in Sibel's cases from getting out. There's a great story in the current issue of Vanity Fair about her. And she is presiding, one of the key members of a whistleblowers panel involving a number of former federal employees who have gone to blow the whistle. So Sibel Edmonds, Sibel Edmonds, Google her, fantastic woman, really courageous. And by the way, one of the allegations...
Hold it. Let's hold it, Peter, until we come back, all right? On our next Coast to Coast program, Gordon Michael Scallion. He's a futurist. We're going to talk about Earth changes and that map. Yes, that map that he has created that shows what the coastlines of the United States will look like in the future. That'll be on our next Coast to Coast program. But when we come back, we'll finish up with phone calls with our guest Peter Lance and you on Coast to Coast AM. So, Peter, what does your investigation do next?
Well, the thing I'm focusing on right now is following, tracking the culpability of people in the Justice Department and the FBI, with the hope that if we shine the light on specific individuals, we could pop open this investigation again. And the book that I'm doing is called Triple Cross. It's the story of this incredible character named Ali Muhammad, who was a part of the radical unit that killed Sadat in 1981. The reason he wasn't indicted was he was in Fort Bragg, North Carolina, advising the Green Berets. That was his alibi. He then went on to train the original World Trade Center bombing cell. He was a Green Beret sergeant. He came to the United States, became a naturalized citizen, joined the U.S. Army, ended up at this top-secret base where the Delta Force and the Army Rangers and the Green Berets are based in North Carolina, and literally on weekends is going up and training Ramzi Youssef's World Trade Center bombing cell in New York. He went on to train bin Laden's bodyguard in coast Afghanistan. He moved bin Laden in and out of Afghanistan to Sudan, and he later scouted the African embassies where, and took the pictures, George, where bin Laden said, put the bomb here. That guy was diddling the FBI and the CIA for decades, I mean for years, for up to 8 years, working as an FBI informant, giving them just crumbs about Mexican coyote smugglers while he was learning the entire playbook on the FBI's playbook on Al-Qaeda. And yet the FBI, when they finally arrested him in the Southern District in 1998, they had a sealed indictment on him. He was never formally sentenced in the sense of being convicted of a crime. He's in some kind of witness protection program to this day. And again, Patrick Fitzgerald is the guy that knows the truth on him. So that's my next book. And I hope it'll complete the trilogy of with Cover Up and 1,000 Years for Revenge. And I hope, you know, I'll, you know, have some answers for you next spring when the book comes out that are more definitive than I have now. But I'm getting closer to the truth.
All right, very good. Let's move on. I do, by the end of this show, by the way, let me ask you about weather manipulation to see if that's an area you might want to tackle. Okay?
Yeah, absolutely.
Let's go to our wild card line. You're on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hi, George. First-time caller, Eric, calling you from Mesa, Arizona.
Hi, Eric. Glad you're here.
Hi, Mr. Lance. You're too awesome to make statements, too, so I just want to ask you three questions, and I'll go off the air. What do you think, why, first of all, I'm sorry, I'm a little nervous, Richard Clark, his version of 9/11 and the actual commission's version of 9/11, how did they differ again?
Right.
And then I wanted to ask... the Pentagon bombing explosion on 9/11. Why? What could they possibly be covering up? And why don't they just come out and say what it is, or not hide the video?
Right.
They could always lie about it if the worst comes to worst. And third, I'm personally afraid of like an EMP type Al Qaeda bomb in the United States. Have you heard anything about that as opposed to a nuclear weapon? And what would it take? And kind of extrapolate to put this administration underground into an underground bunker. Thank you.
Yeah, let me just go on the Richard Clark point. Richard Clark's official story, as laid out in his book Against All Enemies, was that he almost immediately convened a video teleconference in the bunker in the White House, which included Jane Garvey, FAA, Donald Rumsfeld, the Secretary of Defense, the chairman of the acting chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, and that all these people were involved throughout the morning and directly involved in the planning of like whatever the defense of the country was, as flimsy as it was. And yet Rumsfeld, the 9/11 Commission, adopts a different story, completely different, which is that Rumsfeld essentially remained in his office, never went to the war room, the National Command Center, until after the building was hit, which is insane, that the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff was up in a meeting on Capitol Hill in a senator's office and was never informed even until after the second tower went down, that it's just a completely different scenario. So the question is, do you believe the national security, the terrorism czar, who was the man under both Bush and Clinton who planned terrorism, or do you believe the 9/11 Commission? I think Richard Clark was closer to the truth, and I think Rumsfeld was involved. He was in the loop, And I think the idea that this absurd story that Rumsfeld stayed in his office and only came out to, quote, help with the people, the rescue effort, is just absolutely ridiculous. And if, in fact, that is the true story, which is more shameful, that the SecDef, the Secretary of Defense, would be in his office and not in the war room at the Pentagon directing our defense at the time? I don't know. But that's the first part of your question.
Okay. And that's good enough. We've got so many other callers coming in. West of the Rockies, you're on Coast to Coast with us. Hi there. Hello. Going once.
Okay.
Going twice. Are you there? Nope. And let her go. Or him. First time caller line. You're on the air. Hi there.
Hi, George. How are you?
Good, sir. Great.
First, I'd like to congratulate Peter. If I had my druthers, Peter and John Loftus would be put on a commission and given unlimited subpoena powers until they could get to the bottom of this. And that's sort of the basis of my question. Peter, you're approaching this from a sort of exposing the levels of incompetence in handling this. John Loftus has another view, which is sort of, I think, equally important, which is the government, and in particular, this administration's ties with Wahhabi lobby and with Saudi Arabia, continue to a point where there was perhaps actual knowledge or certainly complete intentional ignorance of the fundraising affairs of Islamic extremist groups in this country.
Right.
And that individuals like Grover Norquist, who is now married to an Islamist and may have converted himself and is also the administration's point man on tax policy, is highly influential in this administration's policies. And where I kind of want to tie it together, because it's turning into a ramble here, is when you look at Katrina and the basic failure to, I mean, the term Homeland Security, I don't know which part of that term they don't understand.
Right.
But there seems to have been an intentional disabling, or certainly no increase in the enablement of the United States to respond to a disaster. So without drifting into the world of Alex Jones, I would like to get your opinions, and I'll take them off the air, as to whether, in addition to just simple incompetence and the cover-up of that, whether there's an attempt to cover up sort of a deep compromise, let's say, with the Wahhabi lobby and with Islamic extremism and its ties to certain members influencing and advising our current government.
I agree with you. I don't think I have to jump over to Alex's side of the aisle to agree that the Saudis have an extraordinary influence on American foreign policy. I mean, the fact that, you know, recently they said they were going to release some oil after Katrina. I mean, the Saudis, read Bush, House of Bush, House of Saud, you know, Craig Unger's incredible book. Why were so many Saudis allowed to go at a time when no other aircraft were flying? Why did members of the bin Laden family, who were clearly material witnesses to this extraordinary homicide, why were they allowed? Why were they helped out of the country? Why didn't the FBI hold them as material witnesses? I mean, why? What's the special relationship of Prince Bandar, the former ambassador, over multiple administrations, but particularly with the Bush family? You know, I mean, there's little doubt that the Saudi government has blood on its hands with respect to 9/11, and it's just the idea that Turki bin Faisal, who was a former defendant, by the way, in Motley Rice's lawsuit for 9/11 against the Saudis, he's now going to be the new ambassador. It's just, these are really disturbing questions, and the United States is so beholden to the Saudis, both in terms of the amount of their investment in our country and because of our dependency on Saudi oil. The fact that bin Laden achieved his immediate goal. Does anybody out there realize that bin Laden, his main goal with 9/11 was to get U.S. forces out of Saudi Arabia? This is what Ali Mohammed said at his plea hearing in October of 2000 when the judge asked him, what are your goals? What does bin Laden want? He said, we want U.S. troops out of Saudi Arabia. And guess what happened in March? Within a month after the invasion of Iraq, U.S. troops were pulled out of Saudi Arabia. Bin Laden won. So,
also heard that he wanted to partner up on that Afghan pipeline before 9/11, and they wouldn't let him in the deal. And that's a possibility, too.
That's
Have you heard that one?
I'll tell you one thing. Harry Allen, this extraordinary source of mine in my first book, has passed away, who was an FBI asset, who warned Ken Williams, the author of the Phoenix Memo, as early as 1996 about suspicious pilots in Arizona. He told me that he'd been to two meetings with bin Laden during the BCCI days, the Bank of Credit and Commerce International.
Yes. Yeah.
That bin Laden was involved in that. in a three-piece suit in Washington, D.C., at the very hotel where Reagan was shot. I'm starting to sound like Alex Jones more and more as we get to the end of the show.
Yeah, you are. I'm telling you. Let's go to our international line. Welcome to Coast. You're on the air. Hi there.
Yeah, this is Albert, and I call you from Mexico.
Hello, Albert.
And, I'll tell you what, you got. This is a killer program. And, Peter, you're just touching the tip of the iceberg, friend. You're giving us the cake without the frosting. But the question I have for you, we all know that Dietrich Snell is nothing but a pawn. He's working for somebody else. He's covering for somebody else's, that CIA that you're talking about above. Who is he covering for, and what beneficial, they're looking at money more than anything else. They're not just out to kill people. The bottom line is the oil and the money. Who is he covering for? I'm going to listen for your answer off the air, if I could.
Okay, Albert. Go ahead,
well,
Peter.
Specifically, without jumping to the, again, to the shadow government Illuminati theory, he's covering for people in the Justice Department, the FBI, who have blood on their hands for failing to stop Ramzi Youssef the first time in 1992. They had an informant named Ahmad Salem, an Egyptian-American recruited by a great FBI agent named Nancy Floyd. And he was right on the inside, right next to the blind sheikh, who, by the way, the blind sheikh, I've said repeatedly, is a key to the story. The blind sheikh Omar Abdelrahman helped bin Laden with the other radical Egyptians like al-Zawahiri set up al-Qaeda. The blind sheikh was the spiritual leader of the New York World Trade Center bombing cell, the bridge and tunnel plot. And the blind sheikh, 2 weeks before the coal bombing, bin Laden had the blind sheikh's son said, go to the spilling of blood for your sheikh. And a week before 9/11, the Taliban offered to exchange him for the 8 Christian aid workers that were being held. He's mentioned in both the presidential daily briefing to Clinton in 98 and the presidential daily briefing to Bush of August 6, Crawford, Texas, plot to free the blind sheikh by hijacking planes. I mean, this thing goes way back. And again, the FBI knew about these people as early as 1989 and failed time and time and time again. So I can tell you without a doubt that Dietrich Snell is covering for them. And those people all went on to positions of power and prominence. And again, I don't know if I looked into Giuliani's background, how much he would have known, how much knowledge would Rudy have had as U.S. attorney. I don't know. That's an area I haven't gotten into. But I do hope to have some more definitive answers and have the frosting on the cake in this new book.
Okay, let's go to our West of the Rockies line. You're on Coast to Coast with us. Hi there.
Hi, good evening, George.
Hi.
Good evening, gentlemen. And wanted to ask your guest the degree of credibility or credence he lends to the Paul Williams's American Hiroshima scenario, and if it be credible and you expect it, how imminent do you consider it?
When you say his Hiroshima scenario, just elucidate a little bit.
Well, he believes that there are nukes already in America and that al-Qaeda wants to take out at least 6 cities, minimum.
I don't really know enough about it. I think that there's little doubt that they could have certainly one device, and one device itself, given what you said earlier, George, about how we've already been damaged by Mother Nature, or those who think Mother Nature was tampered with. It would be just have a devastating impact on this country. Just one nuclear device. It doesn't take 6 to, 400. What is the half-life of that kind of radiation?
It's a long time.
And it's very possible. It's just, again, and I really feel like there's something coming. Usually there are 3-year, 4-year intervals in between the attacks. I just think I have this feeling that something's going to happen. I don't have any special knowledge. I just have a sense that something dire is going to happen.
Let's go to our wild card line. You're up on Coast to Coast.
Hello.
Yes, sir.
Oh, good, George. I finally got through. I'm shocked. wonderful program. This is Phil from Michigan via CKLW, Windsor, Ontario, Canada.
Yes.
Talking to two great American patriots. Got a question. Everybody has denied me an answer. Everybody in the press, my friends in the FBI, everybody. What is the relationship with the Jose Padilla, the Brooklyn, Puerto Rican, Al-Qaeda terrorist and the 24 terrorists that Bill Clinton pardoned in his last minutes of office. And what did they have on Bill Clinton?
Thank All right, you. Can you help him? Thank you.
Jose Padilla? You mean the dirty bomber? I'm not sure about the terrorist that Bill Clinton pardoned in the last weeks in office, so I can't really answer that. I'm sorry, I can't make that connection for you because I'm not aware of what you're talking about.
Was Padilla's name ever popping up on anything that you looked at?
He was in. This is another thing where people should go to John Berger's Intel Wire, IntelWire.com, IntelWire. John has done a lot of work on Padilla. He was in Florida at a time, actually, when McVeigh was in the area. Again, I can't get more specific than just referring you to a researcher who's done a lot of work on Padilla.
All right, let's go to what could be our final caller. Wildcard line, you're on the air. Hi there. Hello?
Am I on?
Yes, sir.
Yes, sir. This is, how are you?
Good.
Good.
This is Dave from Colorado Springs, Colorado. I live about 3 blocks from Peterson Field Air Force Base. And there's some crazy times we're living in, isn't it?
Oh, sure.
Oh, man.
We'll get by. We'll make it.
Oh, yeah. I'll tell you what. Times are crazy, but why am I so optimistic? You know, I believe in the American spirit still. And, you know, our government doesn't represent the American people, you know. And I have one question for Peter.
Okay, go ahead.
Peter, I'm sure you're familiar with David Icke's book, Alice in Wonderland and the World Trade Center.
No, I'm not.
Oh, you're not?
I share your optimism about this country, by the way, but I'm not familiar with that book.
Oh, really? I was just wondering, I figured you might be. I was wondering just, you know, how well you thought he did his homework and how on base you think he was.
David's theories are much like Alex Jones, Peter. Yeah, he takes a little more hardline approach to it. But if you haven't read it, it's not fair for you to comment on it. By the way, in that story about Clinton, Final Days, author Barbara Olson had warned that the ex-president pardoned terrorists who had repeatedly bombed buildings in New York City. I'm not too familiar with that, but I'd like
to check
it out.
Is this the same Barbara that died on Flight 77?
It must have been, yep.
Yeah, Ted Olson's wife. Or some say didn't die, but, you know, anyway, I would like to say, George, thank you for giving me a chance to come on, and you've done this a number of times. You've given me an opportunity. All I'm trying to say is full disclosure. I'm trying to get people to get angry, to force the people on Capitol Hill to reopen this investigation, to ask why there hasn't been a single indictment other than Massawi. Where's Khalid Sheikh Mohammed? Why hasn't Ramzi Youssef been interviewed again? He's in the Supermax. He knows more about the 9/11 plot as its architect than anyone. Why isn't Greg Scarpa Jr. being protected? He's helped to expose 2 acts of terror in America. And, you know, why aren't the American people pushing the news media to get the real story?
All right, Peter, thank you so much. Your website, peterlentz.com. For Kara Scoburn, Dan Galante, Steve Carr, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, and Sean Laudasaur, and Art Bell, Ian Punnett, I'm George Norrie. Be safe, everyone. I'll see you on Labor Day Monday.